Welcome to another Psych Matters podcast from the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists. Psych Matters is a series of discussions on training and practice issues facing trainees and fellows of the college and other important topics in mental health. In this episode of Psych Matters, facilitated by Professor Bruce Singh, AM, the Anna Freud Centre in the UK outlined the work they are undertaking on behalf of the college to conduct an independent external review of the evidence for long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy for the treatment of mood disorders. The key components of the review are discussed, including systematic reviews of both quantitative and qualitative literature, and plans to conduct one-on-one interviews with health professionals and people with lived experience of psychotherapy. We also hear more about the Anna Freud Centre team working on the review.
We acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the First Nations and the traditional owners and custodians of the lands and waters known as Australia, and Māori as Tangata Whenua in Aotearoa. We honour and respect the elders past and present who weave their wisdom into all realms of life.
Good evening, colleagues and friends. My name is Professor Bruce Singh, and I'm the chair of the RENZCP Mood Disorders Psychodynamic Psychotherapy Evidence Review Steering Group. The background to this podcast, which is being prepared to bring members of the college up to date with progress, is as follows. In November 2022, the college formed this steering group to oversee an external review of the evidence for long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy for the treatment of mood disorders. The review was in response to feedback raised by college members regarding the 2020 RENZCP clinical practice guidelines for mood disorders. I was asked to chair the group, and it includes RENZCP fellows with expertise and clinical experience in psychodynamic psychotherapy, expertise in evidence-based practice, an academic clinical psychiatrist, and a lived experience community member. One of the key deliverables of the steering group was to develop a request for quote document for the external review to be undertaken. The Anna Freud Centre, based in the UK, was the successful applicant and commenced their review in October 2023. Representatives of that centre are here today to discuss the approach to the review and progress made so far. I now hand over to Professor Peter Ponaghi, Head of the Division of Psychology and Language Sciences at UCL and Chief Executive of the Anna Freud National Centre for Children and Families, to introduce his team.
Thank you, Professor Singh, and it's a wonderful opportunity for us to present our work. I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Chloe Campbell, who is de facto leading the team. She is both at the Anna Freud Centre and University College London and is Deputy Director of the Psychoanalysis Unit at UCL, as well as a Senior Research Fellow at the Anna Freud Centre, and Max Moser, who is a Research Fellow at the Anna Freud Centre, but is also working at UCL. So we bridge the two organisations. Do you want to say hi, Chloe?
Hi, thank you. And thank you for having us here today to give us a chance to explain the work that we've undertaken so far and what we're planning to do next.
Max, do you want to say hi to?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for giving us a chance to explore what we're doing on this podcast.
Thank you, Peter and Chloe and Max. So let's start with a basic question. What motivated the Anna Freud Centre to apply to undertake this work on behalf of the college?
Well, we have history, I would say. So we have history in the sense that Anna Freud, from the very beginning, was committed to research, worked with Dorothy Burlingham, Joseph Sandler, combining a psychoanalytic orientation with research, and my own involvement with the Anna Freud Centre. We started with the directorship of George Moran. The centre actually was as research director of the centre. But we have a history also in psychotherapy evaluation, and with Tony Roth in 1996, I authored a book called What Works for Whom? which was perhaps a little bit premature because at that time we didn't really know what kind of psychotherapy worked for what kind of patient, but it was the first comprehensive review of psychotherapy outcomes, I think, published in that sort of way as a systematic review. The link between Anna Freud and UCL is very close. We have many joint staff with joint professorships in the two organizations, and we are an academic center that's committed to children's mental health, having children and their families at the center of what we do at the same time as being committed to academic work. And we have major trials that we have published that I hope establishes our credibility, published the perhaps the major evaluation of long-term psychotherapy, the Tavistock et al. Depression study in World Psychiatry a few years ago. In Lancet Psychiatry, we published a trial of psychodynamic psychotherapy and cognitive therapy and counseling for children, adolescents for depression. We have American Journal of Psychiatry published mentalization-based treatment trials and so on. So we have trials experience, and we have undertaken major reviews, particularly the review underpinning the Green Paper on Child Mental Health Interventions that actually Chloe Campbell led on a few years ago. We have also been involved in NICE guidance, and I have chaired two NICE guidance development groups, as well as having in our team, not here with us this evening, Steve Pilling, who had actually guided about 40 NICE guidance developments in mental health through NICE, and he's currently not only the director of the National Collaborating Center at the Royal College, but also mental health advisor to NICE. So we feel that we have history and we have a track record. We couldn't find a more important, more interesting task than establishing the current evidence base for long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy that has so many different aspects and so many subtleties and nuances that we are really looking forward to getting to grips with as a team.
Thank you very much, Peter. That's a very comprehensive response. Perhaps I could take you to the nitty-gritty of it. What are the main components of the review?
Well, Chloe, you were kind of leading on it. What about you leading on this?
Sure, thank you. So there are three streams of work that we're undertaking simultaneously in conducting this review. And this sort of allows us to do quite a rich mixed methods approach using quantitative and qualitative methods. And this allows us to get a really broad take on the question of how effective psychodynamic psychotherapy is and what it can offer people who are enduring the considerable distress that is associated with mood disorder. The first strand of work is a systematic review and meta-analysis of the outcomes of long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy. And what we're really doing here is putting together all the good studies in this area and crunching the numbers to see how much people improve in terms of symptoms and other well-being outcomes using validated scales that measure depression. The second strand of work that we're doing is qualitative research, which will involve interviewing three different groups of people: consumers of treatment for mood disorder, people who care for someone with mood disorder, and also clinicians who work with mood disorder. And we're going to conduct these interviews in Australia and New Zealand to get a kind of sense of the local flavour of people's experiences. And the purpose of this line of work is to get that really richer understanding that isn't captured in the quantitative work. How do people experience their treatment? Do carers see their loved ones getting better? And do they see their loved ones perhaps getting worse before they get better? And what is different about the therapeutic relationship in this kind of long-term psychodynamic work? Does it work better for some people than others? Do people find this kind of psychotherapy challenging? how does what people experience in therapy get played out in functioning outside the clinic? These are the kind of nuanced, subtle kind of experiential questions that we really want to explore in the qualitative work. The final stream of work is a kind of mixture of the qualitative and quantitative approach, in that we're doing a systematic review of qualitative literature internationally to get a much wider picture of people's experiences than we can obtain from our interviews alone. So does the picture we get from our interviews tally with what the wider literature says, what people say in other countries or across time? And how well does this wider literature fit with the quantitative findings we're getting from our meta-analysis? So the idea is that from these three strands of work, we kind of have a really fascinating opportunity to develop a sort of portrait, a sort of in-depth understanding of what is going on here with long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy. Is it effective? And if so, is it more effective than other treatments? And how does that process actually work in terms of how people experience therapy? So you can see it's a complicated, multifaceted study, but exciting and complex to undertake.
Thank you very much, Chloe.
I hope that you're enjoying this podcast. If you have a topic suggestion or would like to participate in a future episode of Psych Matters, we'd love to hear from you. Please contact us by email at psychmatters.feedback@ranzcp.org.
So can I ask what progress has been made on the systematic reviews so far?
So we're well underway with the systematic review, which is, in terms of sort of sheer hours of work, probably the most labour-intensive strand of the study. So what we've done so far is we've conducted the search and filtered down thousands of studies to capture and isolate those studies that are really relative to our research question about the effectiveness of long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy. That study has also been pre-registered on the Prospero database, so it's sort of all kind of set out what we're planning to do, and we can then show that we've indeed carried out originally anticipated to do. So we're now in the process of extracting the key data from these studies, and once we've done that, we'll put it all together and sort of crunch the numbers in a statistical analysis of outcomes. In terms of where we are with the other studies, we're in the process of developing the Prospero pre-registration for the wider qualitative systematic review, and also obtaining, finalising the ethical approval for the interview studies in Australia and New Zealand.
Perhaps for those who aren't familiar, you could explain what the significance of the Prospero database.
So the Prospero database is where you go to pre-register all studies of this kind, these kind of meta-analytic or systematic review studies. And really, it's a mechanism to make sure that researchers don't change the game halfway along to show that what originally sought to find is what they found. It establishes a kind of the ground rules for what you're doing, and it shows that you stuck to those ground rules.
Right. Thank you. The interviews with consumers, carers and health professionals, have they started yet?
No, we've not started those yet. We're still finalising ethical approval to enable us to conduct those interviews.
And how many will be conducted and with whom?
Our plan is to conduct 24 interviews in total and to split the interviews equally between consumers, carers and clinicians. So in other words, to interview 8 consumers, 8 carers and 8 clinicians. Depending on some feasibility constraints and the amount of interest we get from our recruitment process, that those proportions might change. However, we acknowledge that integrating the perspectives from all three groups is both important for the college and also really to get a sense of the kind of collective picture.
Right. And how will people be recruited to be interviewed?
So we are sort of working alongside the college on this, and recruitment for consumers and carers will sort of be disseminated across lived experience organisations within Australia and New Zealand, informed by recommendations from college lived experience members. And clinicians will be sourced via a call for interviews through the college networks.
Yeah, and that is all setting up to take place over the next few months.
That's right. So once we have ethical approval finalised, then recruitment and screening can really begin in earnest.
And my understanding is ethical approvals being sought from St. Vincent's?
Yeah, so we have received ethical approval in the UK, and we have submitted an Australian Human Research Ethics Committee with St. Vincent's Hospital, Melbourne, which we anticipate will be finalised and approved within the next week or so. It's also worth mentioning, Professor Singh, that we're also exploring options for ethical approval in New Zealand as well.
So what screening will be undertaken to ensure you get a good range of people with experience of long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy?
So I can answer that as well. And I think effective screening really requires a good recruitment strategy as well as an effective questionnaire. And I think alongside the college, we've kind of got the recruitment strategy covered in order to reach the right people. And we're also co-producing a screening questionnaire with a lived experience consultant to ensure that we really get a diverse range of perspectives on long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy from both Australia and New Zealand as well.
So what is the main information we're trying to get from these interviews?
So I think the purpose of our qualitative study is really to understand from the perspective of consumers, carers and practitioners, really what the role of long-term psychodynamics psychotherapy might play in mood disorder treatment. In particular, we're interested in understanding what specific aspects or unique aspects of long-term psychodynamic psychotherapy people who experience receiving and delivering that treatment find unuseful or particularly useful about it. We're also trying to understand the importance of treatment duration in understanding treatment response, and also where particularly consumers place it and where it stands in comparison to other treatments they may have had.
Okay. We're in early February 2024 when this podcast is being recorded. What are the timelines currently for the three groups of work?
We intend to finish the study by the end of April this year. So the next few months will be of quite intensive work. We'll be finishing off the data extraction and meta-analysis, conducting the interviews, and also conducting the qualitative systematic review. So it's going to be a busy few months.
So when do you anticipate that the college might receive a first draft, if you like?
So I would say we're working towards the writing up of the report in May, having completed the research components by the end of April. So by the end of May is the current working deadline we have.
Thank you. Were there any other points, Peter, that you'd like to emphasise before we wind up?
Yes, Professor Singh, perhaps some of your colleagues might wonder why we are including both quantitative and a qualitative evidence stream when evaluating psychodynamic psychotherapy. Because, after all, randomized controlled trials are the gold standard, any kind of comparative research, and really we can only interpret clearly outcomes across different modalities if we do assign patients randomly to different arms. But, you know, I do think that it's important for us these days to recognize that RCTs are a limited answer to questions about the effectiveness of psychological therapies. And there are important limitations that have been recognized for many years about the generalizability of the results in terms of the conditions under which RCTs are carried out represent the same conditions under which actually clinicians practice. Are the patients the same? Are the treatments the same? Are the settings generalizable? And the question that philosophers have asked is, can we extrapolate to a so-called average patient from an RCT? Really, the question we are asking ourselves when we see a patient is, will it work for that person? Will it work here? Will it work for me? In addition to that, we now know that harms are very rarely recorded, and even if they occur infrequently, they are important. And these are the kind of outcomes that qualitative research is more likely to surface. But I'm even more worried by a recent review that has come out in the Journal of Clinical Epidemiology just a couple of years ago by a group of philosophers from Oxford that reviewed all the papers that have been published as Cochrane reviews, which is 6,928 reviews of over 1,600 interventions in the medical field. And what they found is that when you look at the grade recommendations, recommendations for the quality of the study that underpin these, that they are actually relatively poor, that particularly in behavioral and psychological interventions, of 257 reports, only 20 were rated as high quality. So one of the difficulties looking at RCTs is that even within that way of evaluating treatments, they are, by their own standards, perhaps the majority of cases unreliable, they are low quality, or at least lower quality than previously believed. So I think it's probably important that we try and create as comprehensive a picture, Professor Singh, of any treatment that incorporates qualitative data as intensive as we can gather alongside quantitative data to develop most or as comprehensive possible picture of how the treatment works for a particular group at a particular time in a particular location. After all, as we recognized late in the 1990s when Tony Roth and I wrote the book, What Works for Whom, RCTs are an imperfect tool, and almost certainly their results are best seen as one part of a research cycle. Qualitative, in-depth assessment of patient experience gives us the kind of comprehensive picture that I think we need in this and in other instances.
Thank you very much, Peter. It emphasizes the point that in an evidence-based world, what is evidence and how are we to judge it and how are we to put it together in a multifaceted way to expand what the randomized clinical trial can tell us. But as many of us already know, that randomized clinical trial is often not particularly relevant to the real world. So thank you very much, Peter, Chloe, and Max. On behalf of the committee, I'm delighted that you're on this case for us. We look forward to the first draft of your report, and I'm sure that you've been very clear and about the way that you're going about it, and hopefully our colleagues, when they see the podcast, will feel reassured that we're doing whatever we can to answer this thorny question. More information about the mood disorders group and the work of the Anna Freud Center can be found on the Mood Disorders Hub on the RANZCP website, which is regularly updated.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Psych Matters. Feel free to share it with others and keep an eye out for future episodes. Psych Matters is produced by the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists.